Hey folks, this is Rue.
And Dave.
And this is So Many Books.
So Little Time.
Today we are continuing on Ella Montgomery's Anne of Green Gables with chapter 13.
Yay!
Hey. So cue the music.
How you doing, Rue?
Yeah. It's very windy today, so.
I ate a lot of beans.
No, it's just very windy outside, and so it's kind of disrupting my brain a little bit because I hear the noise of the wind, and then I'm like, wait, what was that? What was
that? Oh, you're like a dog. You're like Doug, you know.
It's dugging me. Yes, it's squirreling me, which isn't always a thing with ADD. Sorry, ADHD, but it does happen, and I'm just in a point, because I've had a bit of a week, lots of uni, lots of work, and
so much so you've even backed into an Australian housewife voice there.
Yes, my accent is going to be very shuffly today, so I apologize in advance. It's one of those days, and so my focus is a bit scattered. And it'll be a fun time to read out the character that is Anne, because I really channel her today.
Well, that sounds excellent.
It's perfect. Well, today, how you been?
Yeah, good. Yeah,
good.
So, last time, last chapter, Anne made her bosom friend.
Yes, she made her best friend, Diana, and it was interesting because right at the end of the chapter, Marilla continues to see the beautiful generosity and kindness within Anne. And Matthew brought some chocolates from town, which was unusual. It's not something you usually do, but he brought the chocolates and she immediately went, oh, I'll share that with Diana. Hmm. Like the first thought was that she would share.
Yeah.
Not... Oh, yay, something for me. And the fact, I love this at the ending, that ending of, was it? Now, don't be looking, I told you so, Matthew. That's bad enough on a woman, but it's not to be endured in a man. It's like, it's a case of Marilla's now also very openly appreciative of having Anne.
She's on Team Anne.
She's on Team Anne. I think she always was, but she was questioning whether she was maybe able to do it.
Have I gotten myself into?
Yeah, I mean, she'll still continuously have that question for herself, but never mind. But yes, we are going to continue in the chapter titled The Delights of Anticipation, chapter 13. It's time Anne was in to do her sewing, said Marilla, glancing at the clock and then out into the yellow August afternoon, where everything drowsed in the heat. She stayed playing with Diana more than half an hour more than I'd gave her leave to, and now she's perched out there in the woodpile talking to Matthew 19 to the dozen when she knows perfectly well she ought to be at her work. And of course he's listening to her, such a perfect ninny. I never saw such an infatuated man. The more she talks, and the odder the things she says, the more he's delighted, evidently. Anne Shirley, you come right in here this minute, do you hear me? It's interesting, she started talking to herself. Just talking to herself, it's great. A series of staccato taps on the west window brought Anne flying in from the yard. Eyes shining, cheeks faintly flushed with pink, unbraided hair streaming behind her in a torrent of brightness. "Oh, Marilla," she exclaimed breathlessly, "there's going to be a Sunday school picnic next week in Mr. Harmon Andrews' field, right next to the Lake of Shining Waters. And Mrs. Superintendent Bell and Mrs. Rachel Lynde are going to make ice cream. Think of it, Marilla, ice cream. And Marilla, oh, Marilla, can I go to it?" "Just look at the clock, if you please, Anne. What time did I tell you to come in?" 2 o'clock. "But isn't it splendid about the picnic, Marilla? Please, can I go? I've never been to a picnic. I've dreamed of picnics, but I've never..." "Yes, I told you to come at 2 o'clock, and it is 3:15. I'd like to know why you didn't obey me, Anne." Why, I meant to, Marilla, as much as could be, but you have no idea how fascinating Idlewild is. And then, of course, I had to tell Matthew about the picnic. Matthew is such a sympathetic listener. Please, can I go? You'll have to learn to resist the fascination of idle, whatever you call it. When I tell you to come in at a certain time, I mean that time, and not half an hour later. And you needn't stop to discourse with sympathetic listeners on your way either. As for the picnic, of course you may go. You're a Sunday school scholar, and it's not likely I'd refuse to let you go when all the other little girls are going. But, faltered Anne, Diana says that everybody must take a basket of things to eat. I can't cook, as you know, Marilla, and I don't mind going to a picnic without Puff's leave so much, but I'd feel terribly humiliated if I had to go without a basket. It's been preying on my mind ever since Diana told me. Well, it needn't prey any longer. I'll bake you a basket. Oh, you dear good Marilla. Oh, you're so kind to me. Oh, I'm so much obliged to you. Getting through with her O's, Anne cast herself into Marilla's arms and rapturously kissed her sallow cheek. It was the first time in her whole life that childish lips had voluntarily touched Marilla's face. Again, that sudden sensation of startling sweetness thrilled her. She was secretly vastly pleased at Anne's impulsive caress, which was probably the reason why she said brusquely, "There, there, never mind your kissing nonsense. I'd sooner see you doing strictly as you're told. As for cooking, I mean to begin giving you lessons in that some of these days. But you're so feather-brained, Anne, I've been waiting to see you'd sober down a little and learn to be steady before I begin. You've got to keep your wits about you in cooking, and not stop in the middle of things and let your thoughts rove all over creation. Now get at your patchwork and have your square done before tea time." "I do not like patchwork," said Anne dolefully, hunting out her work basket and sitting down before a little heap of red and white diamonds with a sigh. "I think some kinds of sewing would be nice, but there's no scope for the imagination in patchwork. It's just one little seam after another, and you never seem to be getting anywhere. But of course, I'd rather be Anne of Green Gables sewing patchwork than Anne of any other place with nothing to do but play. I wish time went as quick sewing patches as it does when I'm playing with Diana, though. Oh, we do have such elegant times, Marilla. I have to furnish most of the imagination, but I'm well able to do that. Diana is simply perfect in every other way. You know that little piece of land across the brook that runs up between our farms and Mr. Barry's? It belongs to Mr. William Bell. And right in the corner, there is a little ring of white birch trees. The most romantic spot, Marilla. Diana and I have our playhouse there. We call it Idlewild. Isn't that a poetical name? I assure you that it took me some time to think it out. I stayed awake nearly a whole night before I invented it. Then, just as I was dropping off to sleep, it came like an inspiration. Diana was enraptured when she heard it. We have got our house fixed up elegantly. You must come and see it, Marilla, won't you? We have great big stones all covered with moss for seats, and boards from tree to tree for shelves. And we have all our dishes on them. Of course, they're all broken, but it's the easiest thing in the world to imagine that they are whole. There's a piece of a plate with a spray of red and yellow ivy on it that is especially beautiful. We keep it in the parlor, and we have the fairy glass there, too. The fairy glass is as lovely as a dream. Diana found it out in the woods behind their chicken house. It's all full of rainbows, just little rainbows that haven't grown big yet. And Diana's mother told her it was broken off a hanging lamp that they once had. But it's nice to imagine the fairies lost it one night when they had a ball, so we call it the fairy glass. Matthew is going to make us a table. Oh, we have named that round pool over in Mr. Barry's field Willowmere. I got that name out of a book Diana lent me. That was a thrilling book, Marilla. The heroine had five lovers. I'd be satisfied with one, wouldn't you? She was very handsome, and she went through great tribulations. She could faint as easy as anything. I'd love to be able to faint, wouldn't you, Marilla? It's so romantic. But I'm really healthy for all that I'm so thin. I believe I'm getting fatter, though, don't you think? I look at my elbows every morning when I get up to see if any dimples are coming. Diana is having a new dress made with elbow sleeves. She's going to wear it to the picnic. Oh, I do hope it will be fine next Wednesday. I don't feel that I could endure the disappointment if anything happened to prevent me from getting to the picnic. I suppose I'd live through it, but I'm certain it would be a lifelong sorrow. it wouldn't matter if I got to go to 100 picnics in after years. They wouldn't make up for missing this one. They're going to have boats on the Lake of Shining Waters, and ice cream, as I told you. I've never tasted ice cream. Diana tried to explain what it was like, but I guess ice cream is one of those things that are beyond imagination.
Wow. That, I was wondering how many more pages that monologue was going to go on for.
Yeah, well, Marilla does comment.
Yeah.
And you've talked even on for 10 minutes by the clock, said Marilla. Now, just for curiosity's sake, see if you can hold your tongue for the same length of time. Anne held her tongue as desired, but for the rest of the week, she talked picnic and thought picnic and dreamed picnic. On Saturday, it rained, and she worked herself up to such a frantic state, lest it should keep on raining until and over Wednesday, that Marilla made her sew an extra patchwork square by way of steadying her nerves. On Sunday, Anne confided to Marilla on the way home from church that she grew actually cold all over with excitement when the minister announced the picnic from the pulpit. Man, don't say that one 10 times fast. The pic from the pulpit. The pic. Such a thrill as went up and down my back, Marilla. I don't think I'd ever really believed it until then that there was honestly going to be a picnic. I couldn't help fearing I'd only imagined it. Wow. Here's a bit of a, if you think about it, this is a child that has just been constantly denied
everything.
Everything. And so, of course, that one time she thinks she might be able to experience something that she's never experienced, she's always wanted to experience, she thinks, maybe I imagined it.
Mm.
Wow. Mm, the trauma. Oh, yes. I couldn't help fearing I'd only imagined it. But when a minister says a thing in the pulpit, you just have to believe it. Okay, that's... Anyway, yeah. Mm. You set your heart too much on things, Anne, said Marilla with a sigh. I'm afraid there'll be a great many disappointments in store for you through life. Oh, Marilla, looking forward to things is half the pleasure of them, exclaimed Anne. You mayn't get the things themselves, but nothing can prevent you from having the fun of looking forward to them. Mrs. Lynde says, blessed are they who expect nothing, for they shall not be disappointed. But I think it would be worse to expect nothing than to be disappointed.
That's something I've always struggled with, that idea. If you expect something, you are letting yourself down for disappointment when it doesn't happen. That can take a mental toll on you. But then the other thing is, like, if you're not looking forward to anything, why is life worth living?
Yeah, it's the balance of hope. Hope allows us to continue and to push through even the most challenging circumstances. And it's okay if one has disappointment. But if one has zero hope, that's the thing that is... I see what she's saying. I agree with it. If you have no hope, but you have disappointment...
Well, it's that thing where...
No disappointment, sorry.
You know, people who are pessimists say... You know, it's basically that thing. I think the worst of everything, so I'm never disappointed.
Yeah, whereas if you think... what could happen and the possibilities and the potentialities, you try and make things happen.
Mm.
Whereas if you don't think they're ever going to happen.
Well, and I think it's also better to think the best of people and the best of what could occur.
And aim for it. And it's okay if it doesn't happen that way. It's just, yeah.
And for me, it is tied up in anxiety and depression that I, like a lot of people, I do tend to catastrophize the future. Ooh, what if this happened? What if that happened?
Which is easy to fall into. It's very easy to fall into.
But you know, sometimes it's nice to flip the script on that and go, oh, what's the best thing I could imagine happening?
Yeah. And I think sometimes we need to do that. And then what's the best thing that could happen? What can I do to bring it into reality? Well, how can I contribute to it? And if you can, you do your best. And even if it doesn't happen, you've done something to move things forward.
Mm.
I don't know. It's a bit of a less passive, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. Marilla wore her amethyst brooch to church that day as usual. Marilla always wore her amethyst brooch to church. She would have thought it sacrilegious to leave it off, as bad as forgetting her Bible or her collection dime. That amethyst brooch was Marilla's most treasured possession. A seafaring uncle had given it to her mother, who in turn had bequeathed it to Marilla. It was an old-fashioned oval containing a braid of her mother's hair, surrounded by a border of very fine amethysts. Marilla knew too little about precious stones to realize how fine the amethysts actually were, but she thought them very beautiful and was always pleasantly conscious of their violet shimmer at her throat, above her good brown satin dress, even though she could not see it. Anne had been smitten with delighted admiration when she first saw that brooch. "Oh, Marilla, it's a perfectly elegant brooch. I don't know how you can pay attention to the sermon or the prayers when you have it on. I couldn't. I know, I think amethysts are just sweet. They are what I used to think diamonds were like. Long ago, before I had ever seen a diamond, I read about them and tried to imagine what they would be like. I thought that they would be lovely, glimmering purple stones. When I saw a real diamond in a lady's ring one day, I was so disappointed I cried. Of course it was very lovely, but it wasn't my idea of a diamond. Will you let me hold the brooch for a minute, Marilla? Do you think amethysts can be the souls of good violets?"
That's odd.
It's an odd ending, right?
Mm.
So, but...
Well, yes, the chapter on anticipation is anticipating a picnic.
Yes, I love the little meta. The meta there. So, right there in her story about the diamonds, like, she was explaining that she thought that they looked a certain way, and when they didn't look a certain way, she cried. Marilla is correct. Life will be full of great highs and great lows for Anne.
And I guess it is that idea, yeah. Would you rather have a life of great highs and great lows, or a consistent middle?
Yeah, well... moderation is good, and highs and lows are great, but it's going to depend on how you cope with those highs and lows. It's okay to experience highs and lows. It's your outcome. If your extreme highs lead to destruction and harm, if your extreme lows lead to destruction and harm, it's the outcome, not so much the emotional state. It's how you cope with the emotional state.
No, I was talking kind of abstractly, though, the idea that it seems some people would rather just have that consistent baseline of not having highs nor lows, but just being. And
well,
for me, no, I would rather have highs and lows rather than just whatever the middle is.
I think some people, it's safer to be in the middle, depending on how they respond to the emotional highs and emotional lows. Just for survival's sake. For survival's sake, some people need to survive. I think we can't project what those highs and lows are for different people. Some people prefer to be in that middle, not necessarily because they don't enjoy having the high highs.
I'm talking about a person who wouldn't. I'm saying one or the other here.
That's the thing.
Like, no, there isn't one or the other. That's why I said it's abstract.
Yeah, it is abstract. Yeah, no, I'm not disagreeing. I'm saying, okay, it's going to go into this topic. Okay, for example, with people who've got extreme depression cycles.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the medication is just there to bring that extreme low into a moderate stage. But what it does do is also bring those extreme highs down to a moderate stage.
Yes.
And so if it's a difference between someone potentially harming themselves and then someone actually experiencing the highs and lows, sometimes it's not always a choice as much as it is a survival. It's not always great. And yeah, I personally would prefer the high highs and the low lows. As long as the low lows aren't contributing to harm. That's the hard part. It's very hard. Like, no matter what choices we make, no matter how we approach it, it's always going to be... So we continue in the chapter of... Chapter 14's title, Anne's Confession.
Mm-hmm.
So we ended on a chapter... Oh, can I hold the brooch? Oh, it's so beautiful. Oh, I love it. Da da da. Anne's Confession is a very ominous kind of title.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Yes.
Damn.
Now, on the Monday evening before the picnic, Marilla came down from her room with a troubled face. "Han," she said to that small personage who was shelling peas by the Spock's table and singing Nelly of the Hazel Dell with a vigor and expression that did credit to Diana's teaching. "Did you see anything of my amethyst brooch? I thought I stuck it in my pincushion when I came home from church yesterday evening, but I can't find it anywhere." I saw it this afternoon when you were away at the Aid Society," said Anne a little slowly. "I was passing your door when I saw it on the cushion, so I went in to look at it." "Did you touch it?" said Marilla sternly. "Yes," admitted Anne. "I took it up and I pinned it on my breast just to see how it would look. You had no business to do anything of the sort. It is very wrong in a little girl to meddle. You shouldn't have gone into my room in the first place, and you shouldn't have touched a brooch that did not belong to you in the second. Where did you put it?" "Oh, I put it back on the bureau. I hadn't it on a minute. Truly, I didn't mean to meddle, Marilla, but I didn't think about it being wrong to go in and try on the brooch. But I see now that it was, and I'll never do it again. That's one good thing about me. I'll never do the same naughty thing twice." "You didn't put it back," said Marilla. "That brooch isn't anywhere on the bureau. You have taken it out or something, Anne." "I did put it back," said Anne quickly, pertly, Marilla thought. "I don't just remember whether I stuck it on the pincushion or I laid it on the china tray, but I'm perfectly certain I put it back." "I'll go and have another look," said Marilla, determining to be just. "If you put that brooch back, it's still there. If it isn't, I'll know you didn't, that's all." Marilla went to her room and made a thorough search, not only over the bureau, but in every other place she thought the brooch might possibly be. It was not to be found, and she returned to the kitchen. "Anne, the brooch is gone. By your own admission, you were the last person to handle it. Now, what have you done with it? Tell me the truth at once. Did you take it out and lose it?" "No, I didn't," said Anne, solemnly meeting Marilla's angry gaze squarely. "I never took the brooch out of your room, and that's the truth. If I was to be led to the block for it, although I'm not very certain what a block is. So there, Marilla." Anne's "so there" was only intended to emphasize her assertion, but Marilla took it as a display of defiance. "I believe you are telling me a falsehood, Anne," she said sharply. "I know you are. There now, don't say anything more unless you are prepared to tell the whole truth. Go to your room and stay there until you are ready to confess."
"Will I take the peas with me?" said Anne meekly.
"No, I'll finish shelling them myself. Do as I bid you." When Anne had gone, Marilla went about her evening tasks in a very disturbed state of mind. She was worried about her valuable brooch. What if Anne had lost it? And how wicked of the child to deny taking it when anybody could see she must have. With such an innocent face, too.
"Ah, Marilla."
"Mm.
Yeah.
I don't know what I wouldn't sooner have had happen," thought Marilla, as she nervously shelled the peas. "Of course, I don't suppose she meant to steal it or anything like that. She's just taken it to play with, or help along that imagination of hers. She must have taken it, that's clear, for there hasn't been a soul in that room since she was in it by her own story, until I went up tonight. And that brooch is gone, there's nothing surer. I suppose she's lost it, and is afraid to own up for fear she'll be punished. It's a dreadful thing to think she tells falsehoods. It's far worse than her fit of temper. It's a fearful responsibility to have a child in your house you can't trust. Slyness and untruthfulness, that's what she's displayed. I declare I feel worse about that than about the brooch. If she'd only have told the truth about it, I wouldn't mind so much." Is that like rationalizing to you?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But also talking through the problem to herself.
Yeah. Mm. She's got interest.
Because it's very easy to see that Anne may have easily, in a fit of imagination, just forgot where she put it.
Yeah, but it's, yeah.
And then, of course, to not be found out, any child always thinks that it'd be worse to tell the truth than to try and get away with it, because they...
Usually, yeah, you'd think that. But also, she didn't help her case by saying things like, "so there," or quickly responding. So, but the question is this, how much of this is Marilla's state of mind and how much of it is Anne having done something? She did admit to a falsehood, an action that was not appropriate, but she didn't know it was appropriate by her own admission. So she learned.
Yeah. It's I have a feeling that whatever happened, both will feel kind of embarrassed about it.
Something will happen, yes. Marilla went to her room at intervals all through the evening and searched for the brooch without finding it. A bedtime visit to the East Gable produced no result. Anne persisted in denying that she knew anything about the brooch, but Marilla was only more firmly convinced that she did. She told Matthew the story the next morning. Matthew was confounded and puzzled. He could not so quickly lose faith in Anne, but he had to admit that circumstances were against her. "You're sure it hasn't fell down behind the bureau?" was the only suggestion he could offer. "I've moved the bureau, and I've taken out the drawers, and I've looked in every crack and cranny," was Marilla's positive answer. "The brooch is gone, and that child has taken it and lied about it. That's the plain, ugly truth, Matthew Cuthbert, and we might as well look it in the face." "Well, now, what are you going to do about it?" Matthew asked forlornly, feeling secretly thankful that Marilla and not he had to deal with the situation. He felt no desire to put his oar in this time. "She'll stay in her room until she confesses," said Marilla grimly, remembering the success of this method in the former case. "Then we'll see. Perhaps we'll be able to find the brooch if she only tells where she took it, and in any case, she'll have to be severely punished, Matthew." "Well, now, you'll have to punish her," said Matthew, reaching for his hat. "I've nothing to do with it, remember? You warned me off yourself."
And away!
Marilla felt deserted by everyone. She could not even go to Mrs. Lynde for advice. Well, what would happen if she went to Mrs. Lynde? There'd be a switch, but also she'll say, "See, told you shouldn't have adopted." Mm-hmm. Yeah, not nice. She went up to the East Gable with a very serious face and left it with a face more serious still, and steadfastly refused to confess. She persisted in asserting that she had not taken the brooch. The child had evidently been crying, and Marilla felt a pang of pity, which she sternly repressed. By night she was, as she expressed it, beat out. "You'll stay in this room until you confess, Anne. You can make up your mind to that," she said firmly. "But the picnic is tomorrow, Marilla," cried Anne. "You won't keep me from going to that, will you? You'll just let me out for the afternoon, won't you? Then I'll stay here as long as you like afterwards, cheerfully, but I must go to the picnic." "You'll not go to picnics nor anywhere else until you've confessed, Anne." "Oh, Marilla," gasped Anne. But Marilla had gone out and shut the door. Wednesday morning dawned as bright and fair as if expressly made to order for the picnic. Birds sang around Green Gables. The Madonna lilies in the garden sent out whiffs of perfume that entered in on viewless winds at every door and window, and wandered through halls and rooms like spirits of benediction. I really like that sentence. Hard to read, but a good sentence. The birches in the hollow waved joyful hands, as if watching for Anne's usual morning greeting from the East Gable. But Anne was not at her window. When Marilla took her breakfast up to her, she found the child sitting primly on her bed, pale and resolute, with tight-shut lips and gleaming eyes. "Marilla, I'm ready to confess." "Ah." Marilla laid down her tray. Once again, her method had succeeded, but her success was very bitter to her. "Let me hear what you have to say, then, Anne." "I took the amethyst brooch," said Anne, as if repeating a lesson she had learned. "I took it just as you said, but I didn't mean to take it when I went in. But it did look so beautiful, Marilla, when I pinned it on my breast, that I was overcome by an irresistible temptation. I imagined how perfectly thrilling it would be to take it to Idlewild and play. I was the Lady Cordelia Fitzgerald. It would be so much easier to imagine if I was the Lady Cordelia, if I had a real amethyst of brooch on. Diana and I made necklaces of roseberries, but what are roseberries compared to amethysts? So I took the brooch. I thought I could put it back before you came home. I went all the way round by the road to lengthen out the time. When I was going over the bridge across the Lake of Shining Waters, I took the brooch off to have another look at it. Oh, how it did shine in the sunlight. And then, when I was leaning over the bridge, it just slipped through my fingers, so, and went down, 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 all purply sparkling, and sank forevermore beneath the Lake of Shining Waters.
And that's the best I can do at confessing, Marilla. Marilla felt hot anger surge up into her heart again. This child had taken and lost her treasured amethyst brooch, and now sat there calmly reciting the details thereof without the least apparent compunction or repentance. "Anne, this is terrible," she said, trying to speak calmly. "You are the very wickedest girl I ever heard of." "Yes, I suppose I am," agreed Anne tranquilly. "And I know I'll have to be punished. It will be your duty to punish me, Marilla. Won't you please get it over right off, because I'd like to go to the picnic with nothing on my mind." "Picnic, indeed! You'll go to no picnic today, Anne Shirley. That'll be your punishment, and it isn't half severe enough either for what you've done." "Not go to the picnic?" Anne sprang to her feet and clutched Marilla's hand. "But you promised me I might. Oh, Marilla, I must go to the picnic. That was why I confessed. Punish me any way you like, but that... Oh, Marilla, please, please, let me go to the picnic. Think of the ice cream. For anything that you know, I may never have the chance to taste ice cream again." Marilla disengaged Anne's clinging hands stonily. "You needn't plead, Anne. You are not going to the picnic, and that's final. No, not a word." Anne realized that Marilla was not to be moved. She clasped her hands together, gave a piercing shriek, and then flung herself face downward onto the bed, crying and writhing in utter abandonment of disappointment and despair. "For the land's sake," gasped Marilla, hastening from the room, "I believe the child is crazy. No child in her senses would behave as she does. If she isn't, she's utterly bad. Oh, dear, I'm afraid Rachel was right from the first. But I've put my hand to the plough, and I won't look back." That was a dismal morning. Marilla worked fiercely and scrubbed the porch floor and dairy shelves when she could find nothing else to do. Neither the shelves nor the porch needed it, but Marilla did. Then she went out and raked the yard. When dinner was ready, she went to the stairs and called Anne. A tear-stained face appeared, looking tragically over the banisters. "Come down to your dinner, Anne." "I don't want any dinner, Marilla," said Anne sobbingly. "I couldn't eat anything. My heart is broken. You'll feel remorse of conscience some day, I expect, for breaking it, Marilla. But I forgive you. Remember, when time comes, that I forgive you. But please don't ask me to eat anything, especially boiled pork and greens. Boiled pork and greens are so unromantic when one is in affliction." Exasperated, Marilla returned to the kitchen and poured out her tale of woe to Matthew, who, between his sense of justice and his unlawful sympathy with Anne, was a miserable man. "Well, now, she shouldn't have taken the brooch, Marilla, or told stories about it," he admitted mournfully, surveying his plate of unromantic pork and greens, as if he, like Anne, thought it a food unsuited to crisis of feeling. "But she's such a little thing, such an interesting little thing. Don't you think it's pretty rough not to let her go to the picnic when she's so set on him?" "Matthew Cuthbert, I'm amazed at you. I think I've let her off entirely too easy, and she doesn't appear to realize how wicked she's been at all. That's what worries me the most. If she'd really felt sorry, it wouldn't be so bad. And you don't seem to realize it, neither. You're making excuses for her all the time to yourself. I can see that." "Well, now, she's such a little thing," feebly reiterated Matthew. "And there should be allowances made, Marilla. You know she's never had any bringing up." "Well, she's having it now," retorted Marilla. The retort silenced Matthew, if it did not convince him. That dinner was a very dismal meal. The only cheerful thing about it was Jerry Boat, the hired boy, and Marilla resented his cheerfulness as a personal insult. "I am unhappy, therefore how dare you be happy?" When her dishes were washed and her bread sponge set and her hens fed, Marilla remembered that she had noticed a small rent in her best black lace shawl when she had taken it off on Monday afternoon from returning from the Ladies' Aid. She would go and mend it. The shawl was in a box in her trunk. As Marilla lifted it out, the sunlight falling through the vines that clustered thickly about the window struck upon something caught in the shawl, something that glittered and sparkled in facets of violet light. Marilla snatched at it with a gasp. It was the amethyst brooch, hanging to a thread of the lace by its catch. "Dear life and heart," said Marilla blankly, "what does this mean? Here's my brooch, safe and sound, that I thought was at the bottom of Barry's pond.
Whatever did that girl mean by saying she took it and lost it? I declare I believe Green Gables is bewitched. I remembered now that when I took off my shawl Monday afternoon, I laid it on the bureau for a minute. I suppose the brooch got caught in it somehow. Well, Marilla betook herself to the East Gable, brooch in hand. Anne had cried herself out and was sitting dejectedly by the window. "Anne Shirley," said Marilla solemnly, "I have just found my brooch hanging to my black lace shawl. Now I want to know what that rigmarole you told me this morning meant." "Why, you said you'd keep me here until I confessed," returned Anne wearily. "And so I decided to confess, because I was bound to get to the picnic. I thought out a confession last night after I went to bed, and made it as interesting as I could, and I said it over and over so that I wouldn't forget it. But you wouldn't let me go to the picnic after all. So all my trouble was wasted." Marilla had to laugh in spite of herself, but her conscience pricked her. "Anne, you do beat all. But I was wrong. I see that now. I shouldn't have doubted your word when I'd never known you to tell the story. Of course, it wasn't right for you to confess to a thing you hadn't done. It was very wrong to do so. But I drove you to it. So if you'll forgive me, Anne, I'll forgive you, and we'll start square again. And now get yourself ready for the picnic." Anne flew up like a rocket. "Oh, Marilla, isn't it too late?"
"Nope, it's only 2 o'clock. They won't be more than well gathered yet, and it'll be an hour before they have tea. Wash your face and comb your hair, and put on your gingham. I'll fill a basket for you. There's plenty of stuff baked in the house, and I'll get Jerry to hitch up the sorrel and drive you down to the picnic ground."
"Oh, Marilla," exclaimed Anne, flying to the washstand. 5 minutes ago I was so miserable I was wishing I'd never been born, and now I wouldn't change places with an angel."
See, there we go. There's the extremes. The fact that she wishes she wasn't. That's suicidal ideation. It's way too extreme.
That night, a thoroughly happy, completely tired out Anne returned to Green Gables in a state of beatification impossible to describe. "Oh, Marilla, I've had a perfectly scrumptious time." Okay, seriously. Impossible to describe, and yet Anne finds a way. "Oh, Marilla, I have had a perfectly scrumptious time." Scrumptious is a new word I learned today. I heard Mary Alice Bell use it. Isn't it very expressive? "Everything was lovely. We had a splendid tea, and then Mr. Harmon Andrews took us all for a row on the Lake of Shining Waters, 6 of us at a time. And Jane Andrews nearly fell overboard. She was leaning out to pick water lilies, and if Mr. Andrews hadn't caught her by her sash just in the nick of time, she'd fallen in and probably been drowned. I wish it had been me. It would have been such a romantic experience to have been nearly drowned."
Oh, dear.
"Oh, dear Anne. It would be such a thrilling tale to tell." She does love her stories. "And we had the ice cream. Words fail me to describe that ice cream, Marilla. I assure you it was sublime." That evening, Marilla told the whole story to Matthew over her stocking basket. "I'm willing to own up that I made a mistake," she concluded candidly. "But I've learned a lesson. I have to laugh when I think of Anne's confession, although I suppose I shouldn't, for it was really a falsehood. But it doesn't seem as bad as the other would have been, somehow, and anyhow I'm responsible for it. That child is hard to understand in some respects, but I believe she'll turn out all right yet. And there's one thing certain, no house will ever be dull that she's in."
Ain't that the truth?
Yeah. Yes, so she's very excitable, very, yeah. We already know that she has a bit of a temper. We also know that she doesn't actually know how to deal with distress. Like, she does and she doesn't. She doesn't know how to deal with all the extremes of the feelings, I don't think.
Well, I think I said this in an earlier episode. You know, she's almost a teenager, and I remember when I was a teenager, every bad thing felt like the worst thing ever, and yeah, you feel everything much more strongly.
And then you compound that with someone, yeah, who's been traumatized, who's had extremes, who's, there's something definitely going on with her, like some stuff has happened. And then her particular character and her particular personality as well, which is very imaginative, very lively, very vibrant.
Yeah.
That's a culmination, and I think we've gone back to Marilla saying that you're going to experience some very, very high highs and very low lows.
And I gotta say, the instant she had her confession, I said, right in my head, I went, oh yeah, she's made up a story to go to the picnic.
Well, yes, she was living and breathing and dreaming picnic for like over a week. Fair.
Yeah. Well, also, I didn't believe for a second she willingly took or lost the brooch.
I think there's too many other character traits that indicate that she is a genuinely, like, a kind. It would be very incongruous. Like, how can you be someone who wants to share and give and who wants to be kind?
And it's funny how, like, she's obviously very easily distracted, and she'll go from one thing to the next without needing to jump the gap, you know. But with all that, I wouldn't think of scatterbrained as a descriptor for her.
Yeah, she's easily distracted, but she's not scatterbrained. Like, she doesn't forget. It's more that she's remembering so much or thinking of so many things at the same time.
So maybe Marilla's concerned about teaching her cooking because she said you have to have your wits about you. You can't go off with the fairies. Maybe that'd be okay.
Maybe, but she does get distracted. Like, I think she's more concerned about, oh my gosh, just realized. Okay, so sense of time is a thing that does happen with ADD. Like, it's a feature, ADHD.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Well, she stayed an extra 45 minutes back from when Marilla wandered her home.
Yeah, and for her, and she was saying, why does time pass so fast here and so slow there? And her sense of time is wonky.
Mm-hmm.
I love the fact that this is way before the DSMV and, like, before we've had the diagnostic manuals.
Yeah.
And they knew it. Like, there was something going on. These are the character traits. Ella Montgomery has a really good grasp of this particular cluster of behaviors, which is interesting.
Maybe she had it herself, or she had a child who had it.
I don't actually know if she had any kids. I have to double check. We'd have to look it up.
Or had a brother, sister,
encountered
family.
It. She would have encountered it or experienced it. But it's really...
In your knowledge, is it like a genetically passed?
There is a high rate of heritability with ADHD, yes. Same with autistic.
So, like, if you're the firstborn, you have it. The other children that may come, probably there's a high chance that
they might have. Yeah, but it's also if you're the first in your family to really display it, that can also be. The theories right now are that it's multigenic, polygenic. So it's polygenetic. It involves multiple genes. It is also involved a little bit of environment, a little bit of social exposure. Like, it's not actually that straightforward at all, like,
okay.
Thing. But there's a big, big genetic component, definitely.
Right.
We'll see. Like, the more we find out, the better we'll grasp it. And it's just a variation of how our brains can be wired.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fine. And there's... I was actually talking to someone at uni about it, because one of the folks in our lab, one of the PhD students or honors students, not sure, one of the research higher degree students and I were having a chat, and in passing was mentioned, oh yeah, I've got ADHD, not me, they mentioned it, and said, oh, so you've got the superpower of hyperfocus, which we're talking in the context of university, that can be really good.
Yeah.
Or research, it can also be really bad for your body. But it is very helpful in other settings.
And but from my understanding, the problem is that you can't purposely turn that on and off. It just sometimes you'll be in the zone and boom.
Yeah.
There you go.
If the circumstances are ideal and it sets off, it can be really, really good. But that hyperfocus comes with the downside of sometimes you completely forget that your body needs to work. Your body needs to go to the bathroom. You need to drink water. You need to get up and move.
So it really is at the extent of everything else.
Yeah. So you go into...
Expense of everything.
Yeah. It becomes an extreme cognitive state. A very focused state. And so that's what can happen sometimes with some of us. And and we were discussing how it's just the way your brain is wired. And it's slightly different. A slightly different way of recollecting or connecting the dots, thinking laterally, being a little bit more broad, I guess, with thinking. And she does. We had that where she connected for the conversation with Marilla about those high highs and low lows. She connected it to something she heard Mrs. Rachel Lynde say in passing. Mm. That was a quote.
Yeah.
And then she connected it to, well, let's analyze this and rephrase it to the context that I actually believe applies, not being told what to believe, but actually thinking it through and applying how it relates to the conversation she was having with Marilla. That's complex thought. And the way, I mean, yes, remember, it's an author writing a character, but if we treat, and you fall into this habit when talking about Anne, she feels like a real character.
Yeah.
She jumps off the pages. Well,
any good character, yeah.
Yeah, and so when you think about it, yeah, Anne absolutely can think very laterally, very wide.
And also when she's asked to do a task, like remember something or do something, she's fairly adept at doing that.
Yeah, she's bright. She's very bright. The challenge is that she has just so many things that are going on in her brain.
Mm.
And I think that's part of it. It's like her thoughts and her feelings are everywhere.
Yeah.
Which I guess is one of the reasons she feels real, because I think until we get older, and even when we are older, most of us, but a lot of us can relate to that in our adolescence and our childhood.
Yeah.
But yes, it's great. And in terms of her cooking, I am nervous about her cooking, because Marilla's right, her sense of time is
right.
Not great, which for cooking, especially if you've got one of those old stoves, coal kind of...
Yes. As I said, maybe she wouldn't be too bad. My brain instantly goes, everything's going to burn.
Well, also, think about it. This is not our electrical stoves. These are our good old wood fire and coal and kerosene stoves. That's really dangerous.
And, baking is such an exact science.
Oh, yes. Baking is incredibly delicate. But yes.
Or I guess I should call it art, because you really have to have a feel for it.
It's a bit of both. A bit of both.
Well, because from my understanding, every stove is different and every oven is different.
Although even with every oven being different. No. Now we're distracting and we're going into British Bake Off.
Hey, we usually have these about an hour, and we're way under at the moment.
No, that's good.
Well, not way under, but...
just under. Yeah. But what we will do is, I think, wrap it up here. Unless...
short one this week, and Rue looked ahead a little, and she said the next chapter may be long enough to just have a one-chapter episode. It's actually been a while.
Yep. I'm counting. Yep. Yep. It's a longer chapter.
And whoa, would you like to give the name of the chapter?
Next episode.
We're quickly going back to the start of the chapter because her Kindle's on her phone, so finger swiping. she's got burn now on her index.
We will find out next week. The title is "A Tempest in the School Teapot." So
she's going to school.
So yes, this is our first chapter of Anne at school. This is going to be interesting.
That poor teacher.
Well, it's more the teacher and the students are not going to know what hit them. And then remember, I think Tempest. So do you think she's going to lose her temper?
Well, it's funny because the Sunday school teacher, Anne just kind of thought, oh, she's not a kindred spirit. She's picking on me, but I'm going to leave it as that.
Yeah.
Whereas this might be something different.
Well, this is going to be an interesting... Well, she's going to be meeting people. She's going to be meeting people in a school setting. It'll be mixed gender.
And a school setting in 1905.
Yes.
A small town school.
Small town.
So everyone knows
everything. Everyone's business. And everyone has heard everything. And their parents would have gossiped without even paying attention to the fact that there are children around. Mm-hmm. And so, remember, Mrs. Lynde is also... Her initial impression of Anne would have probably...
Yeah.
Ricocheted across the village.
And my thoughts of a small town teacher, probably quite a strict person.
Well, yes. Usually they are. So we'll find out. Hold this space for our next chapter next week.
This and more.
I know. It's like, oh gosh, Anne at school.
But
for presumably one of the first times, like she went to school. She had maybe what we calculated 3 months of schooling.
That's right. Yeah.
We calculated like she wouldn't have had much schooling.
But she's been there.
She's been in a school that's associated with an asylum, with an orphanage.
Well, that probably would have been like the local school of the town she was
maybe
in.
But sometimes towns don't want the asylum kids to mix with theirs, so And again, a school that is specifically for the asylum, that means those kids are very similar in terms of trauma and in terms of interactions and experience. And so this is a different setting. These are kids that rarely have had needs that were unfulfilled.
But hopefully Diana is there.
Well, Diana's definitely going to be there. We know she goes to school. So on that note, the music at the top of the podcast was Avonlea by Haygood Hardy.
And at the end, as always, it is I'm the Slime by Frank Zappa.
You can find us on Twitter at...
Oh, yes, on Twitter and Facebook at SMBSLT Podcast. Rue's on Twitter at...
Rue McMoo.
And I'm at Dave_the_turnip, the vegetable.
Yes, yes, not turn up as in turn it up, as in turnip. Yes, yes. This is a farm book, man. This has farming in it.
I throw my turnips in the air. Turn up for what?
Horrible.
So until next time, I hope you've been enjoying Anna Green Gables as much as we have. Please leave us a review on iTunes. When I was editing one of the older episodes, I realized I accidentally asked people to leave us a review on Amazon. And I wondered, well, I don't know how that's going to happen. They haven't gotten into the podcast game yet.
Well, they will eventually. It's a conglomerate.
But yeah, on... Google, anywhere you are listening to our podcast where you can leave feedback, we would much appreciate it.
Yes. You can also just send us a Twitter message. We like it. We don't like it. What were you guys doing in that chapter? What was going on? Did you have hyperglycemia in action? Etc., etc.
Well, I don't know what kind of DMs you're getting, but...
Yeah, let's not talk about what happens in my DMs.
So, until next week, we hope you've been enjoying it, and happy reading, everybody.
Enjoy. Bye.